For some reason.
I
mean, that's one reason.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I've been told I have to get a little bit of self-control with how many sources I print, so trying to work on that. We have a lot of our Nosei Kelim, at least, on these pages, will quote a lot of the other sources. So there's there's a bunch of sources. Hopefully, we'll discuss hopefully most of them. My main goal, my primary goal for today is if you recall, a few weeks ago, months ago, whatever that was, that New York Medical Shabbaton, we talked about abortion on Shabbat. A brief overview of the topic, but we didn't actually look at the primary sources. That was just me talking. This time I wanted to actually analyze these primary sources, see what it is that we're actually discussing, with the main goal being that once we have this background, and I think, I've been thinking about this for a little bit, I think if from abortion, you really, starting with discussing abortion, you really get a good overview of most of the issues that come up with beginning of life problems, including infertility and fertility treatment, things like infertility treatment, and all these other topics. I think they really all start with abortion because, and I think I made this point then as well, it's very hard to know medically. Abortion, I know what it is, especially the FDA helped clarify for us. Apparently, morning after pills is not considered abortion. Medically, abortion is it's already implanted into the uterus, then somehow preventing it from being able to continue in that process, that would be considered abortion. I think that's a good, relatively general, non-specific medical definition for abortion. Yeah, good enough?
Sure.
All right, perfect. It being the blastocyte, I guess, depending on how many cells we're up to at that any given point, the fetus, whatever, the thing. We're not going to say the baby because apparently that causes political or sensitivity issues. Medically, once it's implanted in the uterus, that's what I'm concerned about. Halachically, it's potentially a lot more complicated because I'm not sure where to start my abortion question. Part of the problem being, as we will see while looking through these primary sources, is if there was an issur in the Torah that says do not abort, that would be very easy, right? Or clearly, I should say, says do not abort, then it would be very easy, right? Whatever, I may have to define what abortion means, but once I figure that out, I'll be able to say, well, there's a law in the Torah that says there's a clear prohibition that says do not abort, and therefore, you know, we can't engage in any of these things. Problem is, there really isn't. Right. All we have is a couple of maybe guesses, maybe ideas of what this issa could potentially be. So once I have that, then depending on which other issa I'm including this prohibition in, I potentially have a much wider range of things that could be prohibited. Just for example, so it's clear what I'm talking about, one of the options, for example, is ashchatat zera. One of the options is destroying sperm, destroying seed. Right, so if destroying seed is one of the issues, then not only now is this an abortion problem, but this is also anytime you're doing an infertility check, right? The first thing the easiest person to check when a couple shows up and says they're suffering from infertility is the guy. The woman's much more complicated. The easiest thing is just get a sperm sample and analyze it, right? But now maybe there's a shchatat zera issue. Maybe there's some sort of wasting seed problem. So again, you see, just by talking about abortion, we've already started setting the stage for all of these other topics that will potentially come up. So that's why I think abortion's a good start. That was a long introduction to introducing. So the Mishnah, the clearest source in Chazal that we probably have that really discusses a woman suffering from a situation which may require abortion, which again leads me to repeat a point that I've made previously, and that is abortion nowadays and abortion in prehistoric times or pre-modern times is a very different question. The question used to be a question about saving the mother. How can we save the mother's life is in danger? We now need to save the mother. There are a couple of other questions here and there that pop up, but primarily it's a question about saving the mother's life. Nowadays, our question really is not about saving the mother's life. Usually, the question is, this baby has some sort of genetic disease. We see that, you know, there's something wrong here. If you're in Israel, the ultrasound pictures don't look perfect, so they want to abort the kid. Israel has they just abort every kid, every fetus they possibly imagine. They're just aborting. But if you're anywhere else in the world, hopefully it's not as extreme. But then the question there becomes a question of, can I abort a fetus because I don't want the fetus, not because I'm trying to save the mother's life? It's a fundamentally different question. But again, today we're dealing with primary sources, so we're primarily focusing on the first part of this, which is, I am now trying to save the mother's life. So we have a Mishnah for that. It's a Mishnah, Ha'odot Aisha. Shehi mikasha leled, right? There's a woman, she's having a hard time giving birth, right? So she's We're going to try to do this as carefully as possible to try to make sure we're referring to everything as specifically as possible. So this situation, we're not talking about a fetus, you know, a blastocyst. We're not talking about a fetus within 3 months, within 6 months. We're talking about a woman that's literally about to give birth, right? This fetus is about to pop out. Chances are, I don't know how many months pregnant she is. The Mishnah doesn't tell me. But chances are it's a viable fetus, right? This thing can survive on its own. If it would just come out, it would be totally fine. Okay, so
she's laboring at this point, right?
She is laboring, yeah, but you can also have labor at, you know, 5 months.
But whatever it is, she is laboring.
She is laboring. She is laboring? She's in labor, yes. She's in labor. So chances are this Mishnah is referring to a viable fetus, and she's having a hard time. Now, when we say she's having a hard time, that means she's going to die. We got to do something, right? If we want to save her life, we have to intervene. So what do? The Mishnah tells me, I stick a knife in there, and I just start chopping up limbs of this fetus's limbs. Probably not the most sanitary thing. I'm not exactly sure what the chances of this woman surviving this procedure were. But you're cutting off these limbs. You're basically literally killing the fetus with a knife, right? Why? And the Mishnah tells me, her life precedes his life, its life, right? Now again, the Mishnah just told me, kodmin lechayav. I don't know what this thing is, but I am referring to it as a life form of sorts. I'd point out that a lot of things have life. Animals also have life. There's no prohibition to kill animals, right? But we are referring to this thing as life. Again, that makes sense. This thing is viable, right? Well, it's about to come out. However, that was if nothing has happened yet. She's just in labor, nothing's really moved. Yatza rubo, once his fetus already starts coming out, en noginbo, we don't touch it anymore. Why? She'en dochi nefesh bipnei nefesh. So first of all, once the fetus is coming out, I don't know what that means. All I know is it says most of the fetus. So assuming that it's a normal birth, where everyone's going to live, head first, right? So yatza rubo, just reading the Mishnah sounds like most of the body. What's that? Head, maybe the chest, maybe a little bit of the stomach. That's probably most. Don't touch anymore. Why? Because en dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. I don't know what the term nefesh means, but I know that I can't kill one nefesh in order to save another nefesh. I'm not allowed to kill this baby in order to save the mother's, again, soul. It doesn't use chayim. It uses this weird word, nefesh.
Yes, it probably means, it's probably a term indicating that we're certain that the baby is going to come out, but that it's going to not get stuck, you know? Because
it's
theoretically, yes. You know, it
past
could,
shoulders.
Part of it can come out and get shoulder station and get stuck there. So it probably means that we're certain that the baby is going to come out and be viable. Because it could be that part of the baby comes out and it's still a bad situation.
So it's interesting that you say that, because the Mefalshim that we'll talk about soon on the side here in the Mishnah aren't going to define it like that. But it's fascinating that you bring that up. Maybe that is what it means. I wonder what would happen. What would the Mishnah tell me if, so let's just cheat a little bit. If we look at the Rav Avadia and Bartanua on the right side, right? Yatzar Ubo, Shevlad, it's the highlighted, Umeshayatzar Rov Rosho. What does Yatzar Rubo mean? When most of its head comes out. So for all we know, its shoulder could still get stuck by the shoulders, right? Which is interesting then, based on what you're saying, because according to his definition, if the baby's head sticks out and is now stuck, well, what do we do? Right? Baby stuck. So we keep everything as is, they're both just going to die, right? No one's going to make it. So what do we do in that situation?
When they say in Noginbo, they mean the specific reference to the intentional termination of the now baby, not attempting to successfully deliver the baby. So the midwives did attempt to do things. They push, they get those spoon things and they grab. Right? They would do things where the goal wasn't to kill the baby, the goal was to get it out. so that it would live. Presumably, in Noginbo does not preclude attempting to deliver the baby as one would normally deliver a baby in distress.
Right.
Or do you literally mean in Noginbo? You have to sit there and see what happens because you're no longer allowed to touch either side because in touching, you might be responsible for the death. Like, what do we mean by in Noginbo?
That's a fascinating read. I didn't even think of that one. That's a good one. Again, this is good because this is what I want this year to be, is just carefully reading these sources. That's primarily what we want to do here.
When did they start doing cesarean?
It's as old as Caesar, at least, right?
Caesar's older than the mission.
Something Eugene might know, I guess.
The interesting thing about C-section, which is not why it's not necessarily relevant to the second half of this Mishnah, is because up until recently, relatively speaking, no woman ever had a second C-section, right?
Well,
after the first C-section,
they started doing that maybe 30 years ago or something like that. Second C-section.
No. What I mean to say is that after the woman had her first C-section, she'd die of infection, and that would be it. Yeah. C-section was just a way to save the baby. The woman was not surviving the C-section, right?
So I have just another ha'ara here on mm-hmm. this lashon.
Yeah.
It's if you were to read this like a piece of chumash and read very carefully, the motzin of tohu evarin is superfluous, right? What is that adding? Because all you need to know is mechatkin et avlad b'me'a, right? Minei shechaya kodim l'chaya.
You want to read it mechatkin et avlad b'me'a, minei shechaya kodim l'chaya.
You
cut it, and then what's being added?
What's being added by? And bring, it's almost like a gratuitous.
Why the gratuitously?
Explicit.
Yeah. Why do we have to mention this extra phrase in there? Motzinoto evarim evarim. Right. It's also interesting. I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah.
Let's, as we read all these mifarshim on the side here, maybe we'll help us understand this a little bit better. So again, two things that I did not think about that we just mentioned. One is this phrase motzinoto evarim evarim, and the other one is enoginbo. What exactly does that mean? Can I not assist in the delivery now that the baby's coming out? I would say, just to sort of reveal the cards and reveal the ending, enoginbo, obviously we would help the kid get born if all it means that it's stuck and it just needs to use a force. If obviously we would assist. It's interesting. What?
You like to call them spoons?
Yes, sorry. The big spoons that the midwife showed up with, we could obviously... we obviously would assist. It's interesting what exactly does the Mishnah mean by that. That is fascinating. We should think about that. And the other phrase that we should think about here as well is b'chatchidata motinato evarim evarim. What exactly are we adding on?
Is this, I wonder, talking maybe more specifically about a baby that's reached and that's why there's this difficulty and that's why evarim as opposed to the head coming out?
That's interesting way. Right. You're saying the reason why this baby is going to die is because it's breech presentation.
Right.
You have the feet coming out first. Yeah.
And that would also explain
the difficulty in birth, which would explain why it's not the whole thing. Because if it's the whole thing, then maybe that kind of works, right? If it's majority, that we discussed.
Then it would explain why majority.
Explain why they're talking about majority. Oh, okay. Wait, maybe there's a chance that it works.
The interesting read Neil has that he's arguing that maybe this baby is presenting, this fetus is presenting in breech.
Okay.
So the reason why it's saying motzinoto evarim evarim is because you're literally... The limbs are coming out first, so you're cutting off limb.
She's literally cutting off the limb.
And then rov also doesn't mean rov head, it would also mean rov of the body, because head's going to come out last.
Maybe the rest of the world.
Yes, a rovo.
It's a rovo. Most of it comes out in the reach.
And then you don't cut off.
And then you don't touch it negatively anymore. You don't try to
because the fetus is not viable.
I think he could, but I think he could deliver a baby in breech, and I know in.
But yetzer rubo is not the definition that the baby's going to live, right? And even if it's in a breech baby, right?
Right.
The thing's got to come out, right? It can still get stuck with half of its, you know.
Right, but that's what it's saying. Let's say it's a breach, right?
Okay.
And then read the whole thing. So motzimoto evarim evarim, take it out piece at a time. Mm-hmm. Fine. Yetzaru bo, most of it comes out, en nogim bo. Maybe it's
at that point, we don't know whether it's going to be the mother or the child that survives. So we don't, or the child, fetus, whatever, what are we calling mm-hmm. it? The mother or the it
yeah.
that survives. So we're like, okay, it's in God's hands now. Kind of. We don't right. do anything to endanger her.
I think a no-gimbo here literally means a mechatchinoto. That's what it means. Doesn't mean you don't literally touch it. It means you don't chop it up. That's
right, you're right. You're disagreeing with Joshua's reading, basically.
No, I wasn't reading.
I know I'm reading. I'm yeah. just saying. Whatever. You're disagreeing with that other yeah. option. A noginbo doesn't mean literally
no,
just sit there like an idiot. Do something.
Yeah, it means don't do what I referred to up above, which was
yeah.
chop it up.
Yeah, I mean that's probably. That, I mean, I think we all agree that that's probably what it means. It's just an interesting way of phrasing it. Okay, so let's start with. Let's continue, I should say, with the Baal Tanua. So that's on our right side. So first of all, we already read the first part, right? Yatza Ulbosh Vlad. I don't know what the alternative was. Umashi Yatza Rov Rusho. And when most of the head comes out, Shihu Mishitetze Patchato. Sorry. And Noginbo. I think it means past its nose, right? That's how I would read it.
Yeah.
So you read past, you go past the nose, then you don't touch it anymore. Why she'en dochim nefesh avlad mipnei nefesh haisha? Okay, easy enough. That's pretty much how we've been reading it. The only difference, obviously, is as Neil points out that maybe what the difference here is what would the Baal Tanua argue if the baby's in breech presentation? Is he still going to tell me robo means rov of its head, or does robo mean most of its body? I assume it's the latter. But an interesting question. Also an interesting question.
I don't know.
Farmers, but the big picture point you're trying to bring out here is that this life is not, or this thing is not referred to as a life until very late in the process, until this thing.
So you're putting words in my mouth. So I don't know if that's necessarily fair. I am pointing out. I would agree that the Mishnah does not call it a life. I'd point out the Mishnah just says nefesh, right? At one point, it's calling it nefesh. The point that it's calling it nefesh is once rubo comes out. Let's call it over the head.
Right.
But again, nefesh, we don't know what that. I still don't know what that means.
Okay, so what do you mean you don't know what it means? What do you think it means?
Meaning, I'm not sure what they're trying to say because right in the beginning of this. In the beginning of this Mishnah, it tells me what's the difference between these two cases.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bimnei
shechaya kod min lechayav.
Right.
Its life, her life, is more important than his life.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And then the Mishnah tells me, well, now I can't touch anything, and instead of using she'en dochin chayav mibnei chaya, it says she'en dochin nefesh mibnei nefesh. I don't know what happened. What's the difference? This new. It's a new vocabulary. So I don't know what nefesh means. If I again, the Jewish Link article tells me that I do know what nefesh means because I've apparently discovered the soul of the shul and told it all over to you. But I don't know, I literally soul, I don't know what that means.
Well, maybe this means breath.
What do you mean by that?
Dochim nefesh. Dochim nefesh. That on balance, you know, one breathing thing is equivalent to the other breathing thing.
So how do you read the first one?
You don't know. Again, since the thing's inside, you don't know that it's actually breathing. So it refers to something different.
So chayah, something is alive and not breathing? That sounds worse, no?
Well, it's inside, right? So it's not breathing.
But then it shouldn't be.
Or
shouldn't be
then what is it?
Shouldn't be. She's referred to nefesh and he's referred to chayah.
No, yeah,
right?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it's confusing. It's strange. It is a strange use of what. Yeah. Nefesh. But maybe it's just some catch-all term for, you know, maybe it's a synonym for life.
But then it's still strange why use a cinnamon.
No, I hear
cinnamon.
You. I
hear
you.
Yeah. normally means soul.
Yeah, but I don't know what soul means.
That's,
it sounds like a supernatural thing.
A movie that can help.
Yeah.
That's like the straight translation of the word, right?
Yeah. Nefesh means soul. What I mean is...
It means breath. It means wind. Breathing.
Oh. Yeah, I guess it depends on how technical you want. Fine. But again, we don't know... Well, what's the point? Maybe this is just because... Maybe I don't know Hebrew well enough.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, what is it? What are they trying to...
I don't know if this is a midrashic use of the term or is it a technical use of the term.
Yeah. So just something to be aware of. Think about this terminology. I just want to keep this stuff in. These are all things we're going to have to keep in mind as we're reading how the different mifalshim are going to try to use this Mishnah and these words. So mechatchinet avad b'me'ad, where I'm in the Tosfot Yontev, and right before that, right before the highlight, which actually, Rob, this actually might fit in very nicely with how you're defining nefesh, that it means that it has not yet taken breath. Why? Because zman she'lo yatza le'avir ha'olam, before it entered the avir ha'olam, the air of the world, lav nefeshu. It's not considered a nefesh, v'nitan le'algo l'atzilat imo, and you're allowed to kill it and save the mother. Okay, so pre-exiting the womb, exiting probably, you know, the vaginal canal, it's not considered, this is also going to be a good question, at what point, what stage are we up to here? But okay, fine. It's not because...
This is pretty clear. It's the regular atmosphere. The atmosphere that's around us.
So what is the regular atmosphere? Because I could still be in the vaginal canal, right? I'm outside the womb, I'm in the...
That's not outside of the body, it's still inside the body.
It's in the more of the external part, no? Ish.
External-ish, but there's still pressures that are not the irregular atmosphere, whatever's around you in the atmosphere. It's just not.
Okay.
It's not the air of the world.
I think we might be able to debate this point, but okay. Beside though. So anyway, so it's, yeah.
No, I think it's a fair use of the term, the way you're defining it, because if you look at the other end of the spectrum, how is death defined, which is when you don't breathe.
So I suspect that's where, if you read the Bartanoa, right? Mishayatza Rov Rosho, Shumi Mishatetze Patchato, right? That's very similar to the other Mishnah when you when the building collapses on the person, right? You look for, if you get to the nose, it sounds very similar. It's a little bit too close, suspiciously close to be a coincidence, right? So it could be, again, it could be our focus here is on breathing. And then the other one, on the other side, breathing is important, yes. Unless you're attached to an umbilical cord, then it might be less important. But yeah, after that point, it's definitely important. And he says, "Ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh." Right, this is on the other side, the next page. Vim tomal. Let's talk about Ma'aseh d'Sheva ben Bichri. Joshua, what's the story of Sheva ben Bichri? Bichri. It's a Tanakh story. Aren't you supposed to know Tanakh?
Only the parts
of the Chidon Mayer. Oh, got it. Okay, fine. Not anything else. Right, Shem and Bichri, what's his name, wants to kill him. Yoav wants to kill him. He runs off to a city. He's hiding in the city. Yoav goes to the city and say, either give him over to me or I will kill all of you.
Yeah.
Right? That's a story, right? I'm not making this up. Yeah, but that, yeah. And they throw him out. Yeah, and they give him back.
They give back his head.
Yeah, I think yeah. They take care of the situation for him. Make it easy.
Isn't the lady's name, wait, isn't this Sarah?
And I think the story happens a couple of times. Let's do it again. Yeah. So basically, I don't remember what happened exactly, but he annoyed Yoav. He was a general. Yeah. He annoys Yoav.
What book is this?
Shmuel Aleph or Bet? Okay, Shmuel Bet. That makes sense. He's annoys Yoav. Okay, he runs off to the city because Yoav's trying to kill him. He gets into the city. Yoav approaches the city. He says, either give him over to me or I will kill all of you. And they say, you know, Adkan, we were nice, we let you in, but, and they kill him and bring him out, yeah? They let Yoav do what he wants.
No, I think
they kill him himself? All right. He ends up dead. So the question is, what happened there? How are you allowed to, so this is a general question, how are you allowed to, this is a whole other Gemara, which I did not bring those sources here today, but that's a whole other question, because I didn't really want to get stuck with this, but although when this sugya, it's probably might be hard to not do that. But there's a whole question of in general, if someone comes over and says, I'm going to kill three of you, unless, you know, you hand me over, you know, someone comes in here, I'm going to kill all of you unless you give me Joshua. So in that situation, Gemara says, we can hand over Joshua, because he's specified. Right? If the guy comes over here, I'm going to kill all of you unless you tell me one person, unless you hand over one person to get killed instead, then we're not allowed to hand over anybody else, because we're not allowed to condemn someone to death. It could be he'll kill all of us anyway, but we can't condemn someone to death. This is very complicated. There's a whole sugya about this, and that's potentially also some of the justification for what happened with Yoav. The reason why they're allowed to throw out Sheva ben Bichri was because Yoav said, "Give me this person, give me X." So we're allowed to give them X. A very complicated sugya, and not one of the sources I brought tonight. But maybe I should have. But He says, how do I know ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh? I have this story of Ma'aseh the Sheva ben Bichli. We see that you are dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. Because the story of Sheva ben Bichli, I was allowed to kill him. So why are we here? Can't I kill this child? Kill this fetus. What are we calling it? Kill this baby. Right? We'll say them. So, inei roshom mushlach alecha ledocha nefesh mipnei nefesh. So, Hassan, what's the difference? Mishum dafilu lo masru lo ayo nerag be'ir kishit fasenu yov. What's the fundamental difference between the two? Yeah, he was going to kill him anyway. So, we all would have got killed with it, right? So what should I do instead in an effort to prevent more people from dying if the outcome is going to be the same? I'll kill the guy, hand him over, let's move on in life. How does that affect our situation here? One of the ways that will end up affecting our situation
is what if the baby is alive but non-viable.
Alive?
If the baby is going to die.
Oh, you mean the baby is going to die anyway. I would change it so...
Or the mother's going to die. You could posit either way. If in the best estimation of the doctor, one of them has already reached a point where they're alive, but they're not going to make it, does that change the calculation relative to you have to treat them both as being on parity?
I think that's the more complicated version. I think there's a simpler option. Mm-hmm. And that is they can both theoretically live, but if we can maintain status quo, both will die.
Okay.
How's that relevant to the Sheva ben Bichli?
Because the whole point of Sheva ben Bichli, the reason why they were allowed to hand him over, he was anyway going to die. Because he's anyway going to die, we're allowed to kill one person in order to save everybody else. So in this situation, our assumption in the Mishnah is the fetus is already pretty much out on the end of this Mishnah. The fetus is pretty much out, and he's going to live.
Right.
What if they're both going to die?
Right. Okay.
Right?
I think the breach example works perfectly for this
action. Yeah, the breach example would work out very nicely. Correct. Right?
It
would work very nicely, yes. Right? This, we maintain status quo. Baby is going to kill the mother. Yeah, and not survive. Okay, just because it's breach doesn't mean it can't survive, but just it's
chances
harder.
Are, I don't know exactly how much they could deal with it back then.
Yeah, I have no idea. But anyways. Okay, so that's something else that I wanted to point out. Okay, I want to also look at this Yechin Boaz.
Going back, when they say here, it's not what was the word
we were looking at Shum Shetetze Pitchato.
It's the part above the forehead.
I was thinking that
it's the crown.
Are you sure?
That's what I was looking at before.
Okay, and yeah, that's what it means. It's fascinating. I went with nose because I thought it made more sense. Not necessarily
like
extending the word,
but
it's not what it means.
It's really talking about crowning, I think. If you want to use a medical term, anything beyond that.
Which is fascinating because that's not lov v'sho, is it? I guess depending which way the head's going.
That's why they're talking about head, not.
Well,
it depends on how you
define it. He could also be saying, when you just think about the physics of the situation, you reach a certain level of diameter, and even though it's not physically the majority, it's the majority of the difficult part of the process. Right? You reach a point where for each kind of phase through, it gets wider, and then it stops getting wider for a while, and then and that's easier, and then it gets wider again, and then eventually stops getting wider. But so at crowning, once you get right around here, the head is about as wide as the head's going to be in this situation. And so the rest of the head's going to come...
It's going to go anyway. Interesting. Maybe. Yeah.
So just the ground is sticking out. It's not breathing. It's not...
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Good to know. He's the dinosaur guy.
What's he?
He is...
19th century?
Yeah. Sounds about right. He talks about dinosaurs in one of his things, which is a very big problem emotionally for certain people.
In his papers on Avot, he talks about Jenner, who invented vaccines, must be so important because he saves many people.
He's one of the Tzedekei Olam or something like that. He has a very nice thing to say about
Jenner must go to the Tzedekei Olam because he.
I like him already.
Yeah. We officially have approval of the Feld Yisrael. Excellent. So first highlight. V'ha delo dainina lenke rodef. So you notice this Mishnah never mentions anything about rodef. we have a halachic principle that we could potentially utilize in this Mishnah, and that is, if I'm trying to kill Alan, and I'm chasing him around, right, Joshua's allowed to intervene and kill me first. Rules of Rodif, right? I'm trying to kill you, you can intervene and prevent me from doing so.
Self-defense with a third party.
Self-defense with a third party, yes. So this is similar. Should arguably be the same situation, right? The mother's lying there. She's not doing anything wrong. And this thing is trying to kill it, right? So it's a Rodif, so we should kill it. So
I do agree you can analyze it that way. You could also say, like, you have this thing. It's alive. You have it's surrounded by this woman who's exerting massive pressure on it, trying to kill it. It's not doing anything wrong.
Right. So the mother is the Rodif in this situation. Interesting. Yeah, I guess so. Why not?
Right. So, but in neither case do we
yes. He actually doesn't explicitly say which way he means. I mean, he means, yeah. But he doesn't explicitly say that. So Shani Hacha Shaloit Kaven. Oh no, he does say explicitly. Sorry, Shani Hacha Shaloit Kaven Avlad Lehamita. What's the difference? A Rodef is someone that has in mind his whole purpose is to kill you, right? Here, the fetus has no. His only goal is to live. His only goal is to get out so he can breathe, right? And so it's not, you can't be considered a rodif. Now, I specifically skipped the whole next part of this paragraph because he's going to go back and forth a whole bunch of times about what exactly all these other cases, can they potentially be considered a rodif? Okay, fine, we're going to skip that. Aval hacha, you go to the next highlight. Havlad hazeh lo garam apsik reisha bekavana. וגם שלא כדין לא עשה, כך דרך הטבע הוא להכי לא דנין עלי כרודף. Bottom line is, this is not a rodef because this is דרך הטבע. This is nature. The natural way of things to work is that fetuses have to come out of their mother, and so it's not considered a rodef. Which is interesting. Apparently, as soon as I say natural way of something happening, it's not rodef anymore. Okay. And if we skip to the next highlight, but if we don't kill him, both of them are going to die. Efsho, he's not sure. He says maybe mutar le'amit avlad. You're allowed to kill the fetus kedei la'atzil in order to save the mother. Akopanim imo ukemaisa the sheben bruchi. That's exactly the case of sheben bruchi. That's exactly what we just mentioned. What we inferred from the who was that again? I'm pretty sure it's Tosfos Yontif, even though it doesn't say on top. It looks like it's Tosfos Yontif. V'ava gav de lo damu adadi adadi, even though it's not exactly the same. Great. And, now to Joshua's point, al kopani midi ika rak chayisha lahavlad. De belo ze yemutu shnehem lo yadayinan beikulay hai bevlad shal kopani misafik neifalhu. Okay. He says there is another thing, another fact that we should potentially consider here, and that is, if this baby is a chayisha, it's not going to survive all that long. It'll come out, it'll die within whatever, a certain amount of time. It could be that changes the equation.
You're 31 weeks in the 19th century.
Yeah, kid is not going to make it, right? This thing's going to die.
Yeah, in that situation, what?
He's expanding the allowance.
Yeah.
He said that even then, you wouldn't be, when the mission says that, you can't do anything once Rubo is, maybe not if you have reason to believe it's going to be a high shot.
But to be clear, it's still a suffix. He's not sure.
Right.
He thinks maybe that's a reason to be mechalic. So he has two things to potentially mechalic. One is, and again, he's not sure, which is interesting. One is if both of them are going to die. That's one question. And the other question is, if there's going to be a chayisha. He only talks about the chayisha of the Vlad. He doesn't mention the chayisha of the mother. Right? What if the mother's only going to survive for a little bit longer? Does that maybe change my equation? Maybe I can just kill her. Just cut her open and take the thing out. Right? Unclear. Those are the two things that he's not sure about.
It's also, it's kind of surprised he doesn't make more clear who he's clearly arguing with.
Right. Well, that's, yeah. So let's go through the... Should we look at a Rambam? We'll look at a Rambam, and that's it. I think it'll be good enough.
Yeah,
So the Rambam says. Now, I want to make very clear the reason why I did not bring a Gemara is because it's a Masechet Ohalot. There is no Gemara on Masechet Ohalot, so it's okay that we skipped the Gemara and went straight to the Rambam. Otherwise, you don't go to the Rambam first. Everybody knows that. All right. Anyways, in Halacha, in Perak Aleph, Halacha Chet, he's talking about Hilchos of, by the way, anyone noticed? Yes, but this specific Perak is talking about a Rodef.
Yeah.
right? This is a rodef. This is a situation of someone's chasing somebody else to kill him. This is the middle of this perek. And remember, the Rambam, when he organizes things, they're very deliberate. And there's a reason why he put them there. Or maybe he didn't mean it, but this is how we like giving shirim. And otherwise, we won't have, we'll have much less things to say. Anyway, in the highlight, he says, because of this whole like, concept of rodef, the Chum said, a woman, a pregnant woman, that's having a hard time giving birth, you're allowed to kill, to cut the fetus in her stomach. Ben besam, obviously not literally cutting, because this is either chemical-induced abortion, ben biyad, you know, actually taking a knife and doing that. Why? This is a rodef. Now, I want to point out that we have at no point until this Rambam have used that term, right? Up until now, we're not sure what we're talking about. We're using this esoteric terminology, something about a nefesh, something about a chaya. I don't really know what we're referring to, but it's a different conversation. All of a sudden, now the Rambam tells me he's a rodef. What? Kerodef. Sorry? Kerodef. Yes, sorry. Kerodef. Yes, which is important. You're right. It's not literally a rodef. He's not actually chasing. He's kerodef. Potentially. Rambam doesn't say that, but that's probably what he means. He doesn't mean to kill her. Right. But, and this is fascinating, Rambam tells me something new in Hilchot Rodef. And why? Right? Because Rambam still has to explain the Mishnah. We know there's two parts. There's when you're inside the womb, apparently then I'm considered a rodef. Once I come outside the womb, what happens? Mishotia Rosho, it should still be a rodef, but we don't touch it. Why? He uses the same terminology as the Mishnah. You're not doche a nefesh mipnei nefesh. And he's, I assume what he's trying to do is explain what that means. V'zetiv oshel olam. This natural process. Once it's natural process, I have to stay out and I have to let nature take its course.
But why in any rodef situation, you'd be going, yeah, he's the rodef and he's the one chasing, but I really like him. You don't want to do, we don't say, ain doche nefesh on a normal rodef. If the baby is still the cause of the mother's distress and going to lead to her death in a rodef analysis, then the mission doesn't make sense. Because we are absolutely doche nefesh mipei nefesh. We are doche the nefesh of the rodef as being worth less than the nefesh of the nirdef.
Which is why, it was sort of my point. The way I read the Rambam, I think, would answer that point, right? Because I'm reading Vezetiv Oshel Olam is defining nefesh mipnei nefesh, endochin nefesh mipnei nefesh, right?
But it was the Oshel Olam before also.
Yeah, so apparently, I don't know why, before it's not the Oshel Olam. Now you'll tell me it's because of the nefesh from nefesh, and then you're going to make this a broader argument anytime two people are chasing each other. So maybe he's telling me I need two things. I need nefesh from nefesh, right? I need two nefeshot floating around over here. And I need the natural way of doing things. It can't consciously be one person wanting to kill another.
All right. Well,
for lack of any better phraseology.
There's no nefesh benefesh until there's some sort of birth.
Now.
Yes.
That's correct. That's the only time you have a second nefesh. Otherwise, it's just.
Right. But what's the Rambam doing? You notice what he just did? He told me that the reason why I can't kill the fetus inside. Well, what's the reason why when you read the Mishnah, what was the reason we're allowed to kill a fetus in utero? Right?
Because we're making a value judgment that chaya kovin l'chaya.
Yeah, whatever this thing is, I don't know what this thing is, but I know her life is worth more than his life, which is a rule, by the way, that we never say when we're talking in general. If you tell me, go kill Joshua, or you're going to kill me, right?
Hold on a second. We're defining the different terms of different stages. Stage one, before birth, it is not life for a life. Ever.
But no. So hold on.
The Rambam is saying that the allowance in the first half of the Mishnah is based on the din of rodef.
What is it? Right. Let's separate our two things. Right. In utero, why am I allowed to kill this fetus that's causing harm to the mother's life? According to the Mishnah, it says shechaya kodmin lechayav. Her life is worth more than its life. Okay, life again, animals have life. A lot of things have life. This life is worth more than that life, right? Which again is something that we never say. We always use the expression, why is my blood sweeter than your blood, right? You can't, if you tell me to kill Alan and you're going to kill me, I'm not allowed to kill Alan, right? Because who says I'm more important than him? I have no right to kill him, right? I have to let myself get killed, right? So The same thing. So here, that's obviously not the case. We're just saying this life form is not as valuable as this human life, right? The Rambam says something totally different, right? The figure he's chasing after her to kill her.
As a rodef.
But as a rodef, that now implies, potentially, that this is actually some sort of human being.
I'm not comfortable with you. Because if...
Yeah.
There's an animal chasing a human. Without a doubt, you put down the animal. Because it's not...
Yes. It's not rodef even. It just killed the animal. Yeah.
It's as if it's something... Another human being, but not necessarily yet defined as a human being that's coming to kill. And that's why you can abort.
So I think we'll all agree...
It's less lifey,
to use a technical term. It's less lifey, but it still has a significant form of life because I'm talking about it as a rodef.
I'm listening,
you can say categories.
It's not a plant. A plant has life. That's all you can grow, right? It's more than that.
Right.
Potentially. He doesn't say that clearly, but
potentially.
Yes. Although, again, we don't really know why. Because if you're using Rodef terms is
I'm just looking at the Mishnah.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying within the Rambam, though. The Rambam is going to be very important in this whole discussion. Mm. Right, within the Mishnah, definitely. It's totally two different things, no question about it.
Get some right tools for the
job here. I mean, it doesn't have... You don't have to read full-fledged life in the Rambam. Like Nir said, it's kibbutz. It's not quite fully baked. It's not fully baked life, but it's something sub-life that's going to kill him.
Sub-life, but more, can we at least agree on sub-life, but more than what the Mishnah is giving us credit for up until now? In our degrees of life, Mishnah is maybe plant or animal. This is lifey, as we're calling it. And then there's human life. Can we agree that this is maybe a little...
I can read the Rambam into the Mishnah.
Okay. Well, for my first problem with you reading the Rambam into the Mishnah, I will immediately challenge you before you even start trying to defend this position. And I want you to explain to me, where does the Mishnah even use this phrase, Rodef?
No, it's not, obviously. But it's
not because it isn't.
It's not a Rodef.
It doesn't rise to the level of Rodef.
It's not human. It's like a rodef. It's an analog to a rodef.
But then it's a weird analog to use. Use the Mishnah's analog.
What if she was giving birth to a stone that was killing her?
You know? The Rambam does refer to it.
The stone is also like a rodef.
The Rambam refers to an inanimate object as being like a rodef in the context of an overly laden ship. You're allowed to throw the other people's stuff off the boat.
Is like a what?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's like my animal example.
That is like your animal, but that's even like your stone.
Right. An animal that's using
human. So, okay. Granted. How about this? I'm going to try a different one in order to try to convince the audience. Can we at least agree that there's an interpretation within the Rambam that he is implying that this thing, this fetus, might have more substance than maybe what the Mishnah was implying? That there might actually be some sort of real life here, and that's why I'm referring to it in somewhat human terms.
I mean...
Kerodef, right? That's a...
Let's read the next two words. Kerodef achreya l'orga. Not necessarily a rodef as a rachatorev. As something that is chasing after her to kill. It's a verb, not a noun. This doesn't say kerodef, period. Kerodef achreya l'orga.
Right.
As if chasing after her to kill her. Not necessarily a din rodef. It doesn't say harehu kerodef. That would be what you're saying.
I would point you back to Allah Chavav. B'med dvarim amurim. Yeah. Well, now you're making me talk about other things. B'med dvarim amurim. B'she'aval. V'asah ha'avon shechayav elav mitat bezdin. Okay, whatever. Aval. Harodef achar chavero lehorgo. That is the terminology that he uses when he refers to rodef. Okay. It's not new. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not human context. Like he's specifically indicating that this is something that is not regular rodef. Is that fair?
Okay. No, because he continues.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, not kirodef acharei lehuga. I think there's still a difference there. As one who is chasing or as
a chaser.
The chaser. I think there's a grammatical difference here. If he wanted to say that it's a dim rodef, without a doubt that it's a rodef, he would have just ended the sentences mipnei shehu rodef. Mipnei shehu bedin rodef. Not kirodef acharei lehuga.
So, I mean, this is more of a logistic question, which I'm not anywhere near much enough of an expert to analyze properly. But if you look at these other halachot here, he does use that phrase, and it's because he wants to emphasize le'algo as opposed to rodef to do another aveir. Like a yud, it's right.
He uses that in Vav, right? If you want to read the whole thing, right? The one who chases.
Yeah.
Okay, that's when he uses it. That's when he changes the term. I think it's terminology.
No, but if you look on Halacha Yod, he does the same thing, right? He's chasing after his friend to kill him. He's still using that phrase. We want. I want to make the point that when you're reading the when the Rambam, because therefore this might be actually. Well, basically human thing.
Well, but if the Rambam is analyzing this as being allowed because of Rodef...
Abortion would be murder.
Yeah, Rodef is a particular allowance to kill a person that's limited to when that person is trying to kill another person, right? Or rape. The Rodef case is a very narrow case, and it has rules. And so if you're saying that abortion falls under the category of the Rodef case, then you apply all the limitations of the Rodef case onto the abortion case, as opposed to saying there are two different cases that have their own rules, and you can't draw inferences from the Rodef.
Yeah. So what's the inferences from the Rodef?
Well, one is that
this thing is basically human, and therefore it would be murder.
Yeah, but what would be murder?
Abortion.
Abortion. Outside of the Rodef case.
Almost murder, at least.
Right. Oh, you mean before it comes out?
Yeah. He calls Rodef before it comes out.
Come on.
That's where we're going with this. Moshe Feinstein.
I disagree with the analysis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Granted. My point here was to show A, the Mishnah Naholot, the first source. B, the fact that the first person to make this argument, to call it maybe something, and again, where this debate is illustrating this point quite nicely, that is potentially making the argument that this thing is almost human-like, in which case maybe there's something real chamer here, would be the Rambam. And we'll quote a whole bunch of other sources, again, that don't talk about it like this. And again, even within the reading of the Rambam, it's a little bit unclear. But this serves as the basis of this whole discussion.
It's not... Shehu Kirodev, it's not like it's a descriptive language. It's not... It's a fluffy language he's using here. It's not...
So the only problem with doing that is...
I'll prove it to you from inside the room.
Yeah. Where are we reading, by the way?
We're reading in Yud. We're talking about rape of a woman. It's as if someone killed her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what rape is.
It's almost like a rodef.
Almost like. Kasher killed this.
So, but he doesn't give me that caveat on the previous halacha. So you're switching?
Yes, he does. He's saying that a kid wrote that. Or he's saying that... The kirodef is
exactly the caveat. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I would argue the stronger argument of this reading of the Rambam is the lefichach. The Rambam is basically saying, even though the Mishnah doesn't tell us that this is the reason, the Rambam is basically saying presumptively.
Where's your lefichach?
That's the first word of the highlight.
That he's saying this Mishnah, which doesn't use the word rodef, it doesn't explain itself as being mishum din rodef. He's saying the only reason that you can engage in the act of dismemberment described in the beginning of the Mishnah is because we have the concept of rodef. Mm-hmm. And so the concept of rodef is the allowance. Uh-huh. Absence the allowance from rodef, there would be no such allowance. Right. Presumptively, therefore, it would be prohibited even in the pre-delivery moment. And then your question is,
right? That's the hard
why
part.
Why is it
right?
You still argue as you read the Rambam, saying it's prohibited. People want to make the further move, which is that rodef is the permission to kill a person, and so And so that when the Rambam says the permit that the permission to abort a fetus comes from Rodev, he's making two moves. One, he's saying it would otherwise have been presumptively prohibited. And two, why would it be prohibited? Is because murder is prohibited. Those are the two moves. You don't have to make both moves. You could just say that the first move is that the Rambam is citing that the that there would have been a prohibition absent, but the Mishnah tells me, the Mishnah opens with the case of the woman's going to die.
So it's funny that you say that, because I would then argue that I could potentially read this Mishnah one of two ways, mm-hmm. right? By the way, first of all, just very nice setup for that Rambam. It was much better than what I did. Yes. And if we go back at the Mishnah, right? Mechatchin et avdad b'me'ah. What does that mean? Is the Mishnah telling me I have a chiv to kill the fetus in order to save the mother's life? Or is the Mishnah telling me I'm allowed to kill the fetus in order to save the mother's life? Right? Neisha chaya kod min chayav means what? Otherwise, I would have had a there's an isser of abortion. If I just want to randomly abort a baby, is there an isser according to this Mishnah? If I just read this Mishnah, right? There's nothing wrong with the mother. She just doesn't want to be pregnant, right?
It says makshara yera. That's a condition.
Well,
is that a condition? Is the Mishnah telling me because she's makshala yered, therefore I have to kill this baby in order to save her life?
Listen,
or is the Mishnah telling me, or is the Mishnah telling me, you have an allowance to kill the baby if you want to?
Let's say the woman's saying, not my baby, not my baby, my baby over me, my baby over me. Are you allowed to do that? Right? If the Rambam says that it would be presumptively be prohibited, but we have an allowance because of Rodev, then that's not saying that you're obligated to, that is not implying you have an obligation if the woman's saying, prioritize my unborn baby over me.
Because Rodev, I don't have to kill you, right? I'm allowed to.
Right. Versus...
You don't have to save?
You don't have to do anything? Yeah, you could say, I don't want to...
You don't have to get involved.
Okay. Versus saying, what this case is really talking about is that this is telling me something else. That regardless of what she says,
that's not what the Rambam says.
No, I know it's not.
Yeah. No. In terms of Rodef, the Rambam says you do have to go.
No. So it depends which case of Rodef we're talking about. Abama Machteret is also considered Rodef.
Right.
If someone who sneaks into my house is going to rob me, I'm allowed to kill him. Not because I think he's going to rob me, but who knows what might happen. Maybe he'll end up in a situation where he'll try to kill me. I'm allowed to kill him first. I don't have to kill him first. Just if I'm scared, I have the allowance to kill him first. Right?
So what does this leave us?
This leaves us right now with very few of the primary sources in regards to the discussion of abortion. One of them being this Mishnah, which again, we don't know what exactly this Mishnah is telling me, but at no point does this Mishnah, just reading the Mishnah itself, sound like whatever the stakes are for aborting a fetus, it does not sound like it's anywhere near murder. Maybe there are stakes, maybe there aren't stakes, but whatever they are, they're definitely not within the world of murder. Within the Rambam, maybe we can just, when we discuss abortion, we're talking about quasi-murder. That's where we leave off these primary sources.
Calling it a rodef. And it's only, but the leap there is that because it's kind of like a rodef, then therefore the rodef is some sort of humanoid.
Yeah. If the Rambam felt the need to justify the action by reliance on the principle of rodef, the Rambam is saying, well, this action is a really severe, problematic action. There are very few times you get to do severe, problematic actions, and one of them is rodev. Then what's so severe and problematic about the action? Well, what are you doing when you stop the rodev? You're killing the rodev. And who is the rodev? It's not the person. And that's the move. Now, I also point out that the Rambam uses the word rodev for things that are absolutely not people. But it's not...
Further features to come. So anyway, we were supposed to discuss pretty much all the primary sources on abortion tonight, and we managed to get through basically one. Good job, everybody.